Virginia Woolf's novel To the Lighthouse is a semi-autobiographical novel published almost 100 years ago in 1927. One of the main characters, Mrs. Ramsay, is modeled after her mother, and one of the other main characters, Lily Briscoe, is modeled after her. The book itself is a rewriting of E.M. Forster's novel called Howards End, and that novel opens with an epigraph that says, "Only connect." Thus, his novel and Woolf's novel both explore the meaning of human connections and the meaning of life. All was silence. Nobody seemed yet to be stirring in the house. She looked at it, there sleeping in the early sunlight with the windows green and blue, with the reflected leaves. The faint thought she was thinking of Mrs. Ramsay seemed in consonance with this quiet house, this smoke, this fine early morning air, faint and unreal. It was amazingly pure and exciting. She hoped nobody would open the window or come out of the house, but that she might be left alone to go on thinking, to go on painting. She turned to her canvas, but impelled by some curiosity, driven by the discomfort of the sympathy which she had undischarged, she walked a pace, or by to the end of the lawn, to see whether, down there at the beach, she could see a little company setting sail. Down there, among the little boats which floated, some with their sails furled, some slowly, for it was very calm, moving away. There was one rather apart from the others. The sail was even now being hoisted. She decided that, there, in that very distant and entirely silent little boat, Mr. Ramsay was sitting with Cam and James. Now. They had got the sail up. Now. After a little flagging and hesitation, the sails filled, shouted, in a profound silence. She watched the boat take its way, with deliberation past the other boats out to sea. So, with all the lamps put out, the moon sunk, and a thin rain drumming on the roof, a downpouring of immense darkness began. Nothing, it seemed, could survive the flood, the profusion of darkness which, creeping in at keyholes and crevices, stole around windows blinds, came into bedrooms, swallowed up here jug and basin. There a bowl of red and yellow flowers, there the sharp edges and firm bulk of a chest of drawers. Not only was furniture confounded, there was scarcely anything left of body or of mind by which one could say, "This is he," or "This is she." Sometimes a hand was raised as if to clutch something or ward off something, or somebody groaned or somebody laughed aloud, as if sharing a joke with nothingness. Nothing stirred in the drawing room or the dining room or the staircase. Only through the rusty hinges and swollen sea-moistened woodwork certain airs, detached from the body of the wind, the house was ramshackle after all, crept round corners and ventured indoors. Almost one might imagine them as they entered the drawing room, questioning and wondering, toying with the flap of the hanging wallpaper, asking, would it hang on much longer? When would it fall? Then, smoothly, brushing the walls, they passed on musingly as if asking the red and yellow roses on the wallpaper whether they would fade, and questioning, gently, for there was time at their disposal, the torn letters in the waste paper basket, the flowers, the books, all of which were now open to them, and asking, were they allies? Were they enemies? How long would they endure? So some random light directing them, with its pale footfall upon stair and mat, from some uncovered star or wandering ship, or the lighthouse even, with its pale footfall upon stair and mat, the little airs mounted the staircase, and nosed round bedroom doors. But here, surely, they must cease. Whatever else may perish and disappear, but lies here steadfast. Here, one might say to those little sliding lights, those fumbling airs that breathe and bend over the bed itself, here you can neither touch nor destroy, upon which, wearily, ghostly, as if they had feather-light fingers and light persistency of feathers, they would look once on the shut eyes, and the loosely clasping fingers enfold their garments wearily, and disappear. And so, nosing and rubbing, they went to the window on the staircase, to their servants' bedrooms, to the boxes in the attics, descending, blanched the apples on the dining room table, fumbled the petals of roses, tried the picture on the easel, brushed the mat, and blew a little sand along the floor. At length, desisting, all ceased, together. Gathered together. All sighed together. All together gave off an aimless gust of lamentation, to which some door in the kitchen replied, swung wide, admitted nothing, and slammed to. Here Mr. Carmichael, who was reading Virgil, blew out his candle. It was past midnight. But what had happened? Someone had blundered. Starting from her musing, she gave meaning to words which she had held meaningless in her mind for a long stretch of time. Someone had blundered. Fixing her short-sighted eyes upon her husband, who was now bearing down upon her, she gazed steadily until his closeness revealed to her that something had happened. Someone had blundered. But she could not, for the life of her, think what. He shivered. He quivered. All his vanity, all his satisfaction in his own splendor rising, as a thunderbolt fierce as a hawk, at the head of his men through the valley of death, had been shattered, destroyed,